everyone. I'm Sherry Carney, and I'm a practicing attorney in California representing victims of child sexual abuse. I'm also a survivor. And this is Roar with Sherry, all things justice for women and survivors. You can find us on our social media at Roar is One. Yes, that's the number one. And at Sherry Carney, and on our website, roarisone.org. I've spent over 30 years surviving child sexual abuse, rape, incest, campus sexual assault. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's this. Our greatest gift can be found in our greatest trauma. Our trauma, our pain, cuts through to our inner core and reveals the magic within. And that once survivors find their voice, begin their healing journey, and come out the other side, there is no stopping us. That from trauma comes resilience and healing. You are fearless, brave, strong, courageous, magnificent, and I love you. I want this to be a podcast that's real, unpolished, gritty, honest, and reflects both the pain and purpose that comes from being a survivor. We will always ask, what happened to you? What have you experienced? What have you lived through? What have you survived? What is your story? And what must be done to bring you healing, closure, and yes, justice? The purpose of this podcast is raw emotion, our stories, inspiration, perspiration, and ultimately power through justice for survivors. Each episode will include conversations with guests who inspire me, offer insight into the law, help survivors find justice, victim stories, and life-changing transformations. People who are teaching me, challenging me, and inspiring me to move forward. I'll also have direct conversations with you about what I'm learning from survivors and experts that may help you break silence, speak out, find your purpose, seek and receive justice. So we'll do some episodes dedicated to answering your questions. You are not alone. This is your safe home for open, honest, provocative conversations about the dark secrets 81% of us have experienced, but don't talk about. You do not have to walk this path of life by yourself. You are not alone. We are here, and we will roar as one. All things justice for women and survivors with you. I'm Sherry Carney. Welcome. In this episode, I'm talking with Layla Micklewaite, who fights for the children of Pornhub, the victims of child sexual abuse, whose abuse and incest have been posted and monetized by Pornhub. Layla is the founder and CEO of the Justice Defense Fund and the founder of the global hashtag trafficking hub movement, which is supported by millions around the world. On the Pornhub site, viewers see child rapes, incest, revenge pornography, spy cam footage of women showering, and footage of women being asphyxiated in plastic bags. The trafficking hub movement, led by activist Layla Micklewaite, called on the religious, nonpartisan, non-centralized global effort to hold Pornhub the 10th most visited website in the world and the largest pornography website in the world, accountable for enabling and profiting from the sex trafficking and criminal sexual exploitation of countless victims, including child sexual abuse victims. 2.2 million people signed the petition to shut down Pornhub sites. The nonprofit Trafficking Hub, that's hashtag Trafficking Hub, documents abuses and calls for the site to be shut down. According to Nicholas Kristof, in an op-ed piece in the New York Times, Pornhub prides itself on being the cheery, winking face of naughty, the website that buys a billboard in Times Square and donates to organizations fighting for racial equality and offers steamy content to get people through COVID-19. The Justice Defense Fund, which was created in 2021, is dedicated to empowering survivors of sex trafficking, child sexual abuse, material previously known as pornography, now called sexual abuse material, and image-based sexual abuse to pursue justice through sustainable strategic litigation funding. Lila also advocates for the adoption of laws that prevent child sexual abuse and provide recourse to victims. So let's jump to our conversation. Let me start by saying how much we appreciate having you, Lila, making the time and space to put this information, your experience, research, and knowledge about child pornography, who profits, who benefits, who is hurt by it, so we can understand it both as victims and child sexual abuse victims. And we need to understand child pornography, the sexual violence, because there are those of us who care about children and we care about the children of Pornhub. We want to stop the sexual exploitation of women and children. So thank you for freeing us to see this issue more clearly. Welcome, Lila. Rosanna Arquette said we could not get the full scoop until we talked to you and had you on the show. So it's a great pleasure to have you. I always listen to Rosanna. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be talking with you today and to be sharing with your listeners. So yeah, thanks for having me.
And it's wonderful to have you here. So this, I have a quote from you. I have a quote that says, it's not from you, but it's from an article that says, "They made money off my pain and suffering. An 18-year-old woman named Taylor told me a boyfriend secretly made a video of her performing a sex act when she was 14, and it ended up on Pornhub. The police confirmed. I went to the school the next day. Everybody was looking at their phones and me as I walked down the hall," she said, weeping as she spoke. "They were laughing." So tell us how you've been combating the injustice of sex trafficking for over a decade, and what made you commit to this issue?
Yeah, well, I've been fighting this issue of sex trafficking and exploitation in sexual exploitation, both online and offline, for over 15 years. It was about 9 years ago when I began to research and investigate the intersection between what I call the big porn industry. And there's a big porn industry, just like there's big tech, there's big pharma, there is such a thing as big porn. And I was looking at the ways in which actual criminal content was ending up being distributed to millions and millions of people per day on these big porn mainstream sites. And so, as I was looking into this, I was seeing on sites like Pornhub, Pornhub, as you mentioned, is an enormous site. I mean, the 10th largest website in the world, not just pornography site, but website. Oh. And they, in 2020 had 130 million visits per day. So it's 47 billion visits per year to this site. And they had enough content uploaded in 1 year that it would take 169 years to watch. If somebody actually put those videos back to back and tried to watch them, it would take them 169 years to watch. So massive site. And so what I saw on this site, however, and these are user generated sites. So that means these are YouTubes of pornography, where anybody in the world who has an iPhone or a camera could go in a hotel room or a park or wherever in the back of a car and record a film sex act, which is oftentimes an actual sex crime, and then upload it to the site. But what I discovered as I was seeing these videos, and so many of them being homemade, they're called homemade and they look homemade. These are not films made in a studio. And it looks as though the woman is in distress, that she's, crying out in pain, for example, or it looks like a child where she, is underdeveloped, small body, and appears and talks like an underage teen. And everybody in the world was seeing this content and assuming that this is acting somehow, like assuming that Pornhub was actually vetting these videos. And what I discovered in February of 2020 is I tested the upload process for myself, and I found out that all they required to upload content to the world's most popular mainstream site was an email address. So under 10 minutes, anybody in the world without showing ID to show that this is not a child or a consent form to show this is not a rape victim or trafficking victim, anyone could upload these videos to the site freely. And they were monetized and globally distributed. And I started to sound the alarm. And so that's kind of how things evolved and how I ended up doing what I am doing right now.
Well, I mean, I am shocked. I mean, you need to do more to buy alcohol. You need proof of an identification to buy beer, but you don't need anything but an email address to upload pornography. And here's what one expert told me, that the most number of people uploading child sexual abuse pornography are parents.
Yeah,
and they're monetizing it. Is that true?
Yeah, I've heard that statistic as well. And that information that, you know, often it's not some unknown predator that gets his hands on a child. It's often familial and people who are in direct contact, regular contact, including family members and parents that are engaging in that kind of exploitation. And, you know, one thing that really has struck many people is that, you know, this isn't something, you know, the child exploitation is not something that's only happening in the dark web and the, you know, kind of this seedy underworld of the dark web. This is happening on our most popular mainstream sites. Mm-hmm. And most of what I've understood, you know, is happening on these sites is not necessarily the very young children on the mainstream sites like Pornhub. It's underage teens and tweens that are being exploited on these sites, many of whom, because of the trauma, and I think that's something we can talk about, is what is the impact of a victim of this kind of abuse? What happens to them? And, you know, why is it so significant? Not just the act of being abused, but then having that abuse be distributed. And many of them become suicidal. And it's such an injustice that so many people had no idea was actually happening on our mainstream big porn sites.
You know, you're right about that, because I don't watch pornography. I don't go on Pornhub. And so I'm not an educated person in terms of pornography. But I guess somewhere in the back of my mind, I thought that these were adults, part of the video professional pornography industry. Not that that's a good industry. And that's another conversation about pornography, period. But what you're describing is absolutely horrifying, because think about it. You're 13 years old. Somebody took a lewd picture of you or an embarrassing picture of you. It's uploaded to Pornhub. Your friends can see it. Your teachers can see it. You're religiously. I mean, what would a young girl do? I mean, that's, first of all, at 13, you're not sexualized. You're not, you know, what do you do? I mean, this is shattering. I got to tell you, I'm shattered by this. I'm shattered by it. You're saying it so calmly. And, you know, I feel like my hair's on fire.
Well, I think the thing that is, you know, especially difficult for people to just accept or, you know, understand or realize is, you know, it's horrible when it happens anytime to any person. But in this digital age that we live in this internet age where even young children are connected to their devices from a very young age and able to navigate those things, this could happen to any child. This could happen to really any adult. You know, it's become very normalized for young boys to pressure young girls in their teens and tweens into sexting, to sending, you know, nude photos of themselves back and forth. And, you know, even just girls are nowadays often socialized into feeling that pressure themselves to be doing that, but they don't realize the consequence, the long-term trauma they could face from doing something like that, because it can get out of the hands of the person that they intended it to, you know, so a teen boy will brag to his friends and share that nude video or image of his girlfriend to his peers, and then one of them could upload it to one of these major tube sites.
And there's no consent. I mean, let me say this, Gene, if you are two people in a room and you took a photo of somebody, you need their consent to be able to use it on a website, for example, but you could upload it to a pornography site. It's horrifying. I'll give you an example. I live near the ocean. Occasionally I get a chance to get to the beach, and you know, people are nude sunbathing, their tops are off, they're in these itsy teensy little bikinis, they're teens, they're preteens. I mean, and here's the other thing I'm really worried about. It sexualizes young people for this body image, for this, you know, disturbing sexual interaction. It gets rid of innocence. I mean, we used to be, you know, upset that someone looked at, you know, Playboy magazine or Hustler magazine, or this is so much worse because it's a live person. It's a vulnerable person. You have no control over what gets put up. And even parents I've seen are taking photos of their children in the bathtub, naked, whatever. And, you know, they might send the picture to Uncle Charlie, who decides to upload that to Pornhub. Where are the laws? Where is the consent? You said something really interesting. You said the truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose and it will defend itself. That was by St. Augustine. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, that means to me is just you, if people can't take action against an injustice they don't know exists. And so for me, releasing the truth about this injustice, particularly in the larger injustice of sex trafficking and all kinds of sexual exploitation, is so critical. And sometimes people kind of look down on awareness raising as not feeling that it's as meaningful as it really is. But I feel like it is the foundation of justice work is to release truth about something, to tear down deception and lies. And, you know, that is one thing that's happened drastically with the situation with Pornhub and the big porn tube sites, is that, you know, Pornhub for the last decade has made such, you know, strong and expensive efforts to globally present itself as this kind of cheeky, mainstream, often, you know, ethical site that happens to do pornography. And they, like you mentioned earlier, walk New York Fashion Week, and they have billboards in Times Square, and they have a whole arm of their organization called Pornhub Cares, where they try to save the pandas and save the bees and, you know, donate masks for coronavirus and all of these things. And they do major PR around those things to try to, and it whitewashed what was actually going on. And people had no idea, and they never even suspected to question what was going on. So it's been so important to just shatter the deception, the lies, and to present the truth of what is really going on so we can start to address it.
I want to mention something you said, because there are organizations that do hands-on work, for example, makeup kits for victims, teen victims of sexual abuse, or a self-esteem day. But I don't think that you and I are on the same page, because I think awareness with legal changes and justice will stem the tide on the back end, so we don't have to prepare so many purses, so many self-esteem days, so many gifts for people who've been sexually abused, damaged, are victims of pornography. In other words, without awareness and without legal awareness and education, without the elevation of these issues to a national level, you and I have the perspective that we need to do something about the bigger picture, as opposed to the organizations that are incredible, that are doing the service requirements of survivors and victims. I don't want to have to keep serving victims for the next 200 years. I don't want them to be victims anymore. I want to stem the tide. And I hear you saying the same thing. So thank you for saying that, because it's hard to explain that awareness and a global conversation about this is equally effective as a hands-on activity or a service providing activity, such as therapy. Or, you know, I'm not saying people shouldn't go to therapy and career, you know, improvement and empowerment and self-esteem, but you and I would like to see less victims needing those services.
Yeah. I mean, and not to, I don't want to in any way diminish the importance of those neither. Service organizations.
They're fabulous.
And yeah, I have so many friends who are running those important, and they're critical, and they're so, you know, helpful for just supporting and changing the lives of those who have been victimized. And I don't know what the movement would do without them.
I agree.
But at the same time, you know, I've always personally had a passion for preventative work.
Yes.
And, you know, the idea of it's one thing to be able to help somebody exit a situation of exploitation, but wouldn't it be better if we could just prevent them from ever getting into that situation in the first place? And, you know, I don't want to be too idealistic about it, because I know that, you know, this is such a huge issue, and there are so many victims of it that need so much support. You could never have enough service organizations and therapy organizations.
You could never have enough service organizations.
Don't have enough right now.
We don't.
So we need more.
We do need more.
But at the same time, we do want to see policy change that prevents yes. this exploitation, not only at the government level, but at the corporate level. These corporate facilitators of these bad actors, these corporations like MindGeek and, you know, who's the parent company of Pornhub, that are exponentially, you know, just making the abuse that these victims face even worse, globally distributing it, profiting from it in a massive, massive way. And those systems of exploitation need to be crushed. They need to be, and then things need to change so that it doesn't happen in the future. And that's really my, you know, passion is to see that happen.
I'm so glad you said that, because I feel the same way that you feel with the issues of statutes of limitations for child sexual abuse. I feel like what happens, for example, in the Golden State Killer, he was on the lam. He raped 50 women and murdered 15 people. He was on the lam for almost 40 years. He ran out all those statutes of limitations. So the victims, his rape victims, although they got some justice because procurators were sensitive, but why should they... corporations, government, allow predators, perpetrators, bad actors to escape justice because either the laws are weak, they're not updated enough. An example, the internet laws, the pornography laws are so behind the times of technology. And in child sexual abuse, statutes of limitation in rape and sexual assault. Why should there be a statute of limitations when there's no statute of limitations in California for embezzlement?
Right. So I've heard others say, you know, there's no statute of limitations for the trauma that these victims have suffered. It doesn't
exactly.
suddenly end at some year mark that, okay, you
I
know,
wish
this
it did.
Is lifelong. Yes. It's
I
lifelong.
Wish it ended at some age mark and I could forever be free of the trauma of it. And I'm sure our listeners feel the same way. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to take a break for our listeners. We're going to take a short break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to find out why child pornography is illegal to have, yet 131 million people view it a day and no one is prosecuted.
This podcast is supported by Focus for Health Foundation. Together, we are in the fight to protect children from abuse. Learn more on our social media platforms with our handle at Focus for Health or by logging onto our website at focusforhealth.org.
Hi, this is Roar with Sherry, All Things Justice for Women and Survivors. Welcome back with our guest, Lila Micklewaite, who answers the question, why sites like Pornhub, why is possessing child pornography a crime, but 131 million people a day look at images of pornography and child sexual abuse and aren't prosecuted? And the question I have, Lila, is if the police came to your house and raided your house and they found pornographic images of children on your device, you could be arrested. So what's going on with 131 million people a day who view pornographic images that include children? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, even a larger question than that one would be, you know, the corporation like Pornhub and MindGeek that are storing and distributing and allowing these 130 million users per day to actually download. So they actually intentionally put a download button on every single video without any meaningful verification of the age and consent of those in the videos, knowing the site is infested with real videos of rape and trafficking and child abuse, and then put a download button on every video so that anybody could own that content and then re-upload it again and again and again, even putting the victim's name in those titles of the videos where they would show up, because these are mainstream sites, not dark web sites. The impact is actually worse, because the Google, for example, is crawling and finding and indexing and the victim's name, you know, and their, and one victim, I spoke to, you know, she was underage and exploited on the site. It was a counselor that I was speaking with, and he had said that her name and her hometown and her school name was in the title of the video that was uploaded, and she was suicidal. And, you know, and so it's just the idea of, where's the accountability for the corporations who are monetizing that video and so many others like them? And so I'm encouraged, however, to see that we have yet to see the criminal prosecution, which I am very hopeful, based on all of what's been exposed over the last year and a half, that we will see a criminal prosecution to the full extent of the law to hold these executives accountable for what's been going on, but also civil justice for victims, restitution. There has been six major lawsuits filed against Pornhub and its parent company MindGeek in the last number of months. On behalf of 97 victims, four of those are class action lawsuits. And so, I want to see at least civil justice as soon as possible, and then later criminal prosecution for those crimes that you're describing of storing, hosting, distributing illegal content around the world, and then those who are viewing that, you know, some of them knew what they were seeing, some of them imagine that this is acting, that, you know, Pornhub was vetting these videos because they made that representation. That wasn't actually the case. And so, you know, I think that raising awareness about what's going on, I personally have had many users of these sites say, I can't use that site anymore. I used to use that site. I can't do it because I don't know. I'm not confident that what I'm watching is legal and not exploitation. So,
and it would be interesting if it was made illegal and there was civil damages. That's the whole point of justice, is that there's accountability. Without accountability, there's no justice. Without justice, there's no healing from trauma. I mean, you're talking about teens, preteens, children, women, and everyone whose names are being posted, where they live, their images. And Google, you can never get anything off of Google. How do you go on in life when at 13, an image was taken of you uploaded by a 14-year-old boy, and now you're applying for a job in corporate America, and they Google your name and up pops Pornhub?
Exactly.
I mean, you are ruining millions of people's chances of a good life worldwide, and you're not going after the wrongdoers, which is corporate America, credit card companies, you know, MindGeek, what you're talking about. Like, I'm looking right now. Okay, this was the billboard that I looked at that's in Times Square after, you know, this is what it says. Pornhub erects huge billboard in Times Square after long search for a great non-pornographic ad. This is what the ad reads. All you need is hand. And then you're looking at a billboard where the two fingers are together in the shape of a heart, like you do at a concert venue where you make a heart with your hands. And in the center says Pornhub. The ad is disgusting. Mm-hmm. All you need is hand. Mm-hmm. What the hell does that mean?
Well, I mean, this is just what they've done, some really insane publicity stunts over the years. I mean, that you know, is one of so many that they've done to try to, like I said, whitewash and conceal the real nature of what was going on in this company. And I think what's important for listeners to know too, as we're talking about Pornhub, but its parent company MindGeek actually own a monopoly on the internet porn, mainstream internet porn, as we know it. So they own the majority of the most popular porn tube sites and brands and other studio produced sites. They are the porn company And so holding them accountable is really significant because it's essentially holding a whole industry accountable for allowing this to go on for over a decade. And like you said, you know, we need to see justice, because justice is not, we need to hold the abuser accountable who actually did that act of abuse. Of course we do. We have
to. But then all the people watching it and making money off of it. Like exactly. CNN called Pornhub a classic criminal enterprise with a business structure created to monetize non-consensual sexual content, according to CNN Business. Really? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they go after small pornographers in houses with adults, but they're not going after the largest criminal enterprise of pornography. And I think it's important for your, for all of our listeners to understand, there's this complicated issue about First Amendment and pornography. Can you address the confusion when people say, well, First Amendment rights to do pornographic images? Mm-hmm. Can you address that?
Well, because it's Well, pornography, you know, a film sex act of an adult who's meaningfully and unambiguously consenting to doing that is constitutionally protected in the United States. And, but what we're talking about is not pornography. This is filmed criminal sex acts. These are filmed crime scenes. I often say Pornhub is not a porn site. It's a crime scene. These are not women who signed up to go to LA, to go to a studio, to sign up for the porn industry, who, you know, went, jumped through the hoops of, you know, there's regulations in America called 2257 documentation that documents age and doing record keeping. No, these are people, many of them didn't even know they were on the site for months, weeks, years sometimes, until they find out that there was a camera that was installed in a toilet that was recording them and they didn't know it. And it was uploaded to the world's most popular porn site. And so I think what's really important is to say, this is not that. We're not even talking about the pornography industry as we knew it. It has evolved into something very different. And first and foremost, we need to address the criminal, the mass widespread criminal sexual abuse going on these mainstream sites. That's step one. And so that's what I'm after. And I think, you know, once we go into, you know, pornography itself, it's like a whole nother issue with a whole set of, you know, laws and history and all that. And I'm really not here to change the constitutionality of pornography. I'm here to change the acceptability of film crime scenes being distributed as pornography and saying that's not acceptable. And there's no way. And that's something we can all agree on. There's so much debate around pornography itself. One thing we can all agree on, no matter what your stance on pornography is that women and children and men and boys shouldn't be raped for profit on the world's largest porn sites, period. And that's what's actually has been going on for over a decade.
And thank you for saying that, because MindGeek owns over 100 pornographic websites, production companies and brands, including Pornhub, RedTube, Tube8, and YouPorn. Among its various platforms, the company amasses 3.5 billion views per month, of the lawyers said in a press release. Is it a Montreal-based company, Lila? Is Pornhub Montreal-based in Canada?
It is, yes. And there was actually a parliamentary investigation into the company. And this is something that you would be interested in knowing, is during this investigation that just happened over recent months, for the first time, the executives of this company were called out of the shadows because they have been hiding themselves. They actually have been even using fake names to
hide
their identity.
They want to use fake names, but they're going to use the real names of a 14-year-old without their consent and where she lives, where she goes to high school. Really? What a bunch of bullies, cowards. I mean, that is so outrageous.
It is. Yeah. That's something that I've just felt so passionately about as well, is that, you know, these executives are going through a lot of effort to hide their own identities, and they're profiting off of the exposure, not only the physical exposure, but the identity exposure of these victims. And it's just not okay. But anyway, they actually were called out for and exposed during this investigation for not reporting. So there's mandatory reporting laws in Canada and the United States that if a company is aware of child sexual abuse material, they're required to report that to NCMEC, the National Center on Missing and Exploited Children, the Canadian Center for Child Protection and law enforcement. And what happened was the heads of those organizations came in front of Parliament and they said, we didn't get even one report from MindGeek for over a decade until the end of last year when they were being globally exposed by the New York Times and they were all over the media and lawsuits were mounting. And then they finally started to make some reports. And at the end of the year, they had 13,000 reports and you know, what's probably a matter of weeks. But imagine that 10 years of knowing that children are being exploited on your site and not making any reports to relevant agencies or law enforcement.
What do they think? They're the Catholic Church?
That just shows so much complicity to me. Like, it just shows an intention to conceal and hide what was going on because, you know, probably they were thinking we don't want to destroy the brand that we've established through our billboards.
What is their brand? That they're just some friendly pornography site that gives people some, you know, hand in, you know, in during COVID in self-entertainment or what? I mean, what is there? How do you do PR on a criminal enterprise?
You hide it. You don't let anybody know that it exists and you make sure that everybody feels comfortable and confident in what you're selling in order for it to be accepted. I mean, Saturday Night Live was doing a commercial for Pornhub during 2020. And this was only months before things exploded with the New York Times expose called The Children of Pornhub that, you know, went around the world, Visa, MasterCard, and Discover all cut ties.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Visa, MasterCard, because here's the thing. If you're Visa, MasterCard, Citibank, American Express, do you really want people using your credit card to pay for a criminal enterprise? I mean, it's like child pornography. They're able to use their American Express card. So where are the credit card companies in supporting your efforts?
Well, so I would say I wouldn't give them too much credit in the sense of a benevolent actions here. I think it's mostly self-protection because
bad PR,
in the United States, well, besides bad PR,
legal
in
protection.
The United States, if a corporation knowingly benefits from a sex trafficking venture, they are liable to be sued. And in June, Visa was actually sued by 34 victims of Pornhub and MindGeek for knowingly benefiting from that trafficking venture. And, you know, what's being, you know, coming to everyone's awareness is that in the digital age with distribution of sex act, film sex acts, a minor that is used in a commercial sex act, according to our US laws, is a victim of trafficking. And so every instance of a minor being exploited on Pornhub, which is a very commercial site, they're making hundreds of millions of dollars off this content, is a situation of trafficking. Therefore, our trafficking laws apply. And that is how Visa was sued. And so I think that what's going on is that these card companies are recognizing the serious liability they have and knowingly, you know, continuing to allow their card to be used in these transactions with companies that have such a reckless, disregard for human safety that they would allow videos to be uploaded to their site without verifying the age of those in the videos, not verifying the consent of those in the videos. And so they just basically said, we just can't do business with you anymore.
And let me say this, children under this age of consent cannot consent. If you are 13, 14, 15, you do not have the power to consent. But what's so important is I am really up with you in terms of the importance of the law and of civil legal liability in getting actors to do the right thing. It isn't necessarily, you know, testimony in front of Congress or an article. It's that they personally have legal liability that their lawyers are saying, holy shit, this is a bad deal. And so yeah, say to me, why is the law so important for extending civil statutes of limitations? Why is it so important for extending criminal statutes of limitations? Why is it important to hold bad actors accountable? Because it has liability, and liability to corporate America is not something they welcome ignorantly.
Yes. And extending as much as possible the most recourse to victims as possible. So with you, with the statute of limitations, your passion for that, that is giving survivors and victims more opportunity to hold their abusers accountable. And in what I've seen in this situation and in others where these acts of trafficking are all about finances. This is all about money. This is money driven. These are corporations driven by profit. And so when you hit them where it hurts, when you bring, you know, when there's civil litigation where you are going to impact the bank account, it appears they care more about that than even the law as far as criminal law, because, you know, companies like MindGeek, you know, clearly have not been caring so much about, you know, these criminal acts that are going on the site. And, you know, example, following laws like mandatory reporting or the distribution of child pornography, or, you know, any of those things. But when it came to Visa and MasterCard and Discover saying that they're about to cut ties, in 24 hours, they deleted 10 million videos off their site. They offloaded 80% of their entire site in 24 hours when they were threatened with Visa, MasterCard, and Discover cutting ties. Exactly. So you see these dramatic change, like these dramatic reactions.
People sometimes don't understand why I say civil lawsuits are so powerful, and why when you start to hold people civilly accountable and corporations civilly accountable and organizations civilly accountable, that's where you're getting real change. I often get a lot of pushback that criminal is so much more meaningful to victims. I don't know if all victims understand that the civil, where it costs corporations money in legal lawsuits and damages, is much of a greater impetus. These CEOs aren't worried about going to jail. They're not worried about, I mean, if we can't get bad actors like R. Kelly or, you know, Bill Cosby, allegedly, or Weinstein, allegedly, criminally, civilly is the answer to long-term corporate change, because the bottom line
corporate
is what
change.
The shareholders are looking at.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I think individual abusers need to, you know, be thrown in jail. I think the executives of these companies, when they break the law, they need
should
to be
thrown in jail,
held liable, thrown in jail as well. The problem is that there's limited resources within the government to pursue, you know, and they have certain priorities, and it's not always these cases of sexual abuse that get the top priority.
Wealthy, influential people that can outspend government lawyers with swanky $2,000 an hour suits, that can drag these cases on, that can, you know, by the time anything criminally happens, you know, the victim is probably, you know, too old to, you know, testify. But that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I'm just saying, criminally is a very important remedy. Civilly is 10 times more important,
also,
in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And also injunctive relief is another important
restraining
thing.
Restraining
orders.
You
can force change on a corporation through civil lawsuits as well. So you can not only get, you know, restitution and damages for victims, also change business policies as they realize their liability in these cases. You can also force policy change within the corporation through injunctive relief.
And even taking down images could save a lot of young people from a life of this following them forever. And let me ask you, in a lawsuit, would it be possible to not only require they take down the images, but to also clean up Google so that these images can't be searched? I mean, I don't want to be a 14-year-old kid that makes out with a boyfriend and maybe my top is taken off to be haunted by it in my 30s, looking for a law job or a technology job or nursing job or a child caretaking job. It's not fair. Lila, no. And let me ask you, do you think it's possible to make permanent change happen to get rid of Pornhub altogether and the sexual assault that comes with it? I mean, what does the future look like? Yes.
Yes. My rally, you know, from the beginning when I discovered all this is we need to shut down Pornhub. We need to hold its executives accountable, in which means if they've broken the law, they're going to prison. As an example, to say that we do not tolerate this. Doesn't matter if you're a person or a corporation engaging in this abuse, you need to be held fully accountable. And, you know, I've often said, look, with Harvey Weinstein, we didn't let him just say sorry and say, I promise to never do it again, and then go on his merry way running his big old company. No, that's not how the law works. That's not how justice works. You need to be held fully accountable. And he had to be prosecuted for what he did, even if he says, I won't do it in the future. So with an example of Pornhub, they can't just change their upload policy, take down 10 million videos, and then go on their merry way and think that that is actual justice. It's not. And so we need to see real justice. And what I see is that means that that site doesn't get to exist anymore. Those executives need to be criminally investigated and prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
How powerful a lobby is Pornhub? Like, do they lobby in Canada and the United States for, are they on like K Street in Washington, D.C., where they're in and out of Congress and senators' offices every day? And if they lobby, what are they lobbying for?
It's interesting because, you know, they themselves are not necessarily going in and out of congressional offices, but there is an organization called the Free Speech Coalition, which is such a strange name for this organization that is been funded by MindGeek. And they actually do have full-time lobbyists in Washington now. And the things that they've lobbied for in the past and aggressively fought for and against are things like child protection laws for pornography. So, you know, they fought really hard against a law called USC 2257, which requires age verification and record keeping for those who are in pornographic content. And they've fought that really hard for a number of years, trying to destroy that protective law for children not to be exploited in pornography. Who does that? You know, who actually fights laws in pornography to have condom use? Like, that's just basic common sense for health and safety. But again,
the why was that such a fight? There was a huge fight about requiring the pornography industry to have condom laws. I mean, who fights that?
The Free Speech Coalition. And that's what, so you're asking about who's lobbying, and that's, you know, they're one of the organizations that are doing that and fighting against regulation. And, you know, in the case of what's going on the tube sites and these, the way that mainstream pornography is distributed today is so different than it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And they have thought that they don't have any requirements or any regulations. They're wrong about that. But, you know, efforts to fight regulation in this case, I feel are, I mean, that's just supporting abuse. You know, their common sense regulation is age and consent verification for those who are used in that content and distributed online.
Okay. So
who's arguing that?
Who is arguing and who's arguing for child sexual abuse and having statutes of limitations to only protect predators, perpetrators, and pedophiles? Who wants to raise their hand and say they're for child sexual abuse? They're against age verification. It doesn't make sense to me. It's like,
well, it's financial. So it's, again, you know, these things are financially driven decisions. So in a case like the porn tube sites, the reason why they would fight verification is because it's not consistent with their business model of allowing 169 years worth of content to be uploaded to Pornhub every year. If they had to vet every video and make sure that the people in the videos were actually consenting adults, that would cause friction with the upload process. That would cause less results on Google. It would cause less traffic to the site, which means less advertising revenue. And that's really what all of this comes down to. One of their representatives was caught saying, if we did age verification, she was talking about those who are consuming this content, because that's another issue.
Exactly.
She said, if we do age verification, this is going to destroy our profits. You know, she said, oh, we're going to lose 50% of our traffic to the site. And, you know, was kind of complaining about that. And it just shows where the priorities are. these are profit-driven corporations, and that's why holding them accountable, regulation, civil liability, and criminal prosecutions is what's needed to rein it in.
Well, we don't have any problem saying we're against drugs and let's go after drug traffickers. And, you know, you can't buy drugs on the street, but you can upload child pornography, violence against women freely, easily, no age verification. What is that? I mean, and here's the other thing. So let's talk about the fact that Texas is now saying, you know, there is no exception for having an abortion 6 weeks, whether you're it's by rape or incest. There's no problem in interfering in a minor's life, in a woman's life, but they don't want to stop the images being uploaded of a child being raped, a woman being asphyxiated. I mean, criminal enterprises. I mean, what's the lawmaker's excuse? I mean, mm-hmm. I understand the corporations are profiters and mm-hmm. they have shareholders and, you know, they're going to do it as long as they can get away with it and can count on Congress to be 100 years behind the times in laws that apply to the digital age. But what is Congress's excuse? Mm-hmm. What do they say? No,
that's interesting because I think with regard to Congress, and I think with regard to lawmakers, what I've seen, it's more of an issue of they've also been under this deception that the general public has in that they didn't realize how bad this was or what mm-hmm. was really going on in order to address it. And so what I sense is in the conversations I've had with lawmakers is that there's really bipartisan agreement. There's very few things that have bipartisan agreement these days. This is one of them that I've seen, you know, left and right agree that this is not okay. And we need to have laws to stop it now, because there was a bipartisan bill introduced at the end of last year, right after Nick Kristof's article came out. It was called the Stop Internet Sexual Exploitation Act, a really important bill. And that, you know, needs to be reintroduced. And
what happened to that bill? Because, you know, a lot of these bills go to the graveyard to die. But
yeah.
What happened? I mean, you know, it should be under Title 18, which is the Sex Trafficking Act. It seems like a no brainer, not to get too technical. What happened? Who was sponsoring?
So it was Merkley and Sass, and mm-hmm. I think it was just
Ben Sass, right?
And it needed mm-hmm. to be reintroduced. So it just this, you know, session ended now. Needs to be reintroduced. And I think it will be. I'm hoping that it will be. I also want to see an amendment to USC 2257, mm-hmm. which is the age verification and record keeping law, to mm-hmm. update it to say in the digital age, mm-hmm. these sites are responsible for those same requirements and say that explicitly so they know that they're held accountable to those standards. And really just bring it up to speed. And that would be, I think,
absolutely, because it's not fair for physical sites to require age verification, but digital sites mm-hmm. don't have to. I mean, it's really, it's like the difference between, you know, NBC, ABC, CBS, and HBO and Netflix. I mean, if they're all, and Facebook, if mm-hmm. they're all means of communication, they should mm-hmm. all be under the same house of what flies and what doesn't, and the same regulations. It's like, because something is digital and new, doesn't give them a free pass to get mm-hmm. a slap on the wrist. So one final question I ask our guests is, if there was a child sexual abuse victim like Taylor, whose sexual abuse was photographed and uploaded to Pornhub or another site, if there was one thing you could give them to help them on their healing journey or their justice journey, what would you say to that victim who's devastated by it?
Mm-hmm. I would just say, you know, one thing I've heard over and over is that there's so much shame involved when that happens, and they feel like they can't reach out. They can't tell anybody, even, you know, 14-year-olds who are spending their whole day in the room, not doing their homework. They're just searching the internet for their name to try to get these videos down, because they keep going up again and again and again. And they're afraid to reach out because they feel so ashamed. And so I would just say, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
You know, go to somebody that you trust, a trusted adult, let them help you. And, you know, just try to overcome, you know, that just barrier to reaching out, and because it's so unfair for them to have to handle these things on their own. and
kids, you know, they're, you know, I don't know how you were at 15 and 16, but I was a numbskull. You know what I mean? I mean, I was like, you know, not sophisticated.
Yeah. You just don't smart, have what it takes. I mean, you know, even as an adult, I mean, adults, it's not just children. You even adults have such a terrible, you know, difficult, traumatic journey when when they become a victim and a survivor of this kind of abuse. And so, you know, when it's happening to a child, it's just, you know, it's just, you just don't have what it takes on your own to overcome.
And you're right. As an adult, you don't have what it takes. I mean, I certainly didn't have what it took as an adult in my 30s to handle this. I mean, the trauma stays with you. There's PTSD. There's, you know, low self-esteem. There's suicidal ideation. You know, I mean, there's, you know, self-abuse. There's all kinds of, you know, people get into drugs and alcohol. I mean, this doesn't leave you when you turn 18 or when you turn 40 or when you turn 50. We're finding in the recent statistics that the average age of victim of child sexual abuse remembers, understands their damages, puts it all together, man or woman, age 52.
Wow.
That's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we used to think it was in the 30s. It's not, particularly male survivors. So before I,
I just really quick wanted to say that goes back to your passion of statute limitations is, you know, sometimes I would imagine survivors are not even ready to talk about it for a long, long time. And then what happens when it's too late to pursue justice at that point? That's really unfair.
And that is unfair. And I'm noticing that predators are picking states with shorter statute of limitations, civilly and criminally, and can avoid it altogether with the states that have statute of limitations. And after the limitations is run, they're free as a bird. It's not even a slap on the wrist. It's nothing. Their criminal statutes are gone and their civil statutes are gone. It doesn't benefit survivors at all and victims. And it doesn't stop corporate endorsement of it either. So is there anything I missed, Lila? Did I mess anything up? Is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to say?
You know, I feel like we've had a fantastic conversation. We've covered a lot of ground. I mean, there's always so much more to say and so, you know, much more depth to each thing that we've talked about. But, you know, if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, if you want to follow my work in the future, I am pretty active on social media at Lila Micklewaite is my handle. You can go to justicedefensefund.org and get updates there. And, you know, if you are a somebody that has suffered abuse in any of the ways that we've talked about, you know, we're a newer organization, but we are really, you know, in our launching phase here, and we are wanting to support survivors who want to, you know, pursue justice. And that's why we're the Justice Defense Fund. So, reach out to us at justicedefensefund.org. And yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to share today about this work.
It's been so wonderful to have you. I am so grateful you're here with us. You really helped me understand the criminal enterprise we call Pornhub or child pornography or pornography. In this regard, the more we can understand child sexual abuse that's monetized by child pornographers and the sexual assault and sexual abuse of women, the rape of victims that's monetized, the more we can do to protect, save, tighten up the laws so we can ensure justice for these victims of child sexual abuse, cyber child sexual abuse, victims of pornography and cyber porn, and the children of Pornhub. The more we can shut down child sexual abuse and Pornhub and other websites that feed off the twisted, lustful child and woman soul destroying images for money and normalizes and sexualizes women and children, so we can prevent the next generation, just like we talked about, from being shamed, used, abused in their most private moments, uploaded for money by those who are supposed to love and protect them or those who are trying to profit for them. The more we can talk about it, the more we understand it. You've brought so much light to this topic. I learned so much from you, Lila. I mean, I didn't really understand the corporate support of this and the financial part of this and how the laws can really influence corporate decisions because it involves shareholders and shareholder profits, and the more we can get justice for survivors. We would love to hear from you at Roar as One. You can email us at helloroarpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on social, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Roar as One. Yes, that's the number one. You can follow me, Sherry Carney, on social. And as you all know, the Roar with Sherry podcasts have episode pages on roars1.org or wherever you listen to your podcast. Donate to, for victims of child sexual abuse to roars1.org/donate. It was such a privilege to talk to Lila Mickleway. I love the work she's doing. Rosanna Arquette was right. You've told us how people can find you at the Justice Defense Fund at the hashtag, give me the hashtag again.
So if you want to follow what's going on with Pornhub specifically, yes. Trafficking Hub. So trafficking play on Hub. Pornhub is Trafficking Hub.
Great. Yeah. And thank you for being a light of hope to all those women and children whose images of child rape, incest, revenge porn, spy cam footage of women being asphyxiated in plastic bags that are on Pornhub and other sites. You are a justice warrior, a she-hero, inspiration, help, and courage, and action, all bundled into one. Smart, wise, calm, brilliant woman, and the world is a better place because of you and all that you do. I want to thank you to our listeners. I'm grateful to you for spending your time with us today. Stay kind, stay brave. Remember, you can survive and thrive. I promise. And always speak up, stand up, fight for yourself and for those who can't fight for themselves yet, who need you as their superhero, and be the advocate you are for justice.
This podcast is supported by Focus for Health Foundation. Together, we are in the fight to protect children from abuse. Learn more on our social media platforms with our handle at Focus for Health or by logging onto our website at focusforhealth.org.
Thank you. Stay safe and know that I love you. Roar with Sherry, All Things Justice for Women and Survivors, is hosted by me, Sherry Carney, attorney at law, produced by Chris Pedretti, associate produced by Amy Gutierrez, sound engineered by the awesome Ronan Rosner, and music by the amazing Sharon Gattau. Roar with Sherry, All Things Justice for Women and Survivors, is an educational program of Roar as One, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit. We'd love to hear from you. Please follow us on our social media at Roar as One and at Sherry Carney, and go to our website, roarasone.org. And as you know, all the Roar with Sherry podcasts have episode pages on roarasone.org, and we will give you all the guests and all our social media handles on the website, roarasone.org. Roar as One, Inc. owns the copyright in and to all content in and transcripts of the Roar with Sherry, All Things Justice for Women and Survivors podcast, with all rights reserved, including right of publicity. Sherry Carney, the host of Roar with Sherry, All Things Justice for Women and Survivors, is a survivor and practicing attorney in California, representing victims of child sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sexual harassment. Even though Sherry Carney is a licensed practicing attorney in the state of California, practicing in the areas of child sexual abuse, sexual assault, and sexual harassment, this podcast is intended for informational purposes only. There is no expectation of confidentiality, and it is not intended, nor should it be construed as legal advice. For legal advice, you should seek competent legal counsel. If you're interested in speaking to Carney's law practice, they can be reached at carneyadvocates.com. Please note that Carney Law is owned by Sherry Carney. Carney is the founder of Roar as One. Roar as One is a nonprofit. Carney Law is a law firm, and they are otherwise unaffiliated. The nonprofit Roar as One is providing this podcast as a public service and is informational only. It is neither legal advice, legal interpretation, legal representation, or a statement of policy. Reference to any specific guest, product, or opinion by the host or guest does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by Roar as One, Inc., Sherry Carney, She Heroes Production, Inc., the producers, or our sponsor. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent, and is purely voluntary. Yeah.